So welcome to the webinar titled Empty Wallet Syndrome. Today we are going to be talking to you about different opportunities to help pay back your loans. This is being put on by the Leadership Development Institute Fellows from Sina Paimi. Just before we get started, I know some of you have already been on the call for a little bit, so you already know the little spiel, but I will be muting everyone during the course of the presentation. At the end, at the last 15 minutes, we will have opportunities for questions. There are two ways to have your questions answered. One is you can type in your question in the chat, which is below. You also can, at the end of the last 15 minutes when I ask for questions, you can raise your hand. So I had a few of you already practice raising your hand. There's a little button on the side that shows a little hand being raised, and you can press that and it will show that your hand is raised, and I will unmute you at that time so you can ask your question. But please save your questions until the end, because that's when we will have the opportunity for your participation. I will be recording this session, so it will be available to you and others who may have missed it at the end of the call. As we begin, please remember, if you are calling in and not on your computer, I don't have the ability, I don't believe, to mute you. So if you could just mute yourself so we don't get any feedback from others. So on that note, I will send it off to Brandy, who will begin this webinar for us. And I will unmute her right now. Brandy, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Excellent.
Okay. So my name is Brandy Pippa Watson, and I'm here with the other five LDI fellows whose names are presented here on the first slide. And what we wanted to do today was provide this presentation for you all to talk about a few of the options that are out there and available to early career folk and people that are trying to find ways to pay back their student loans. So I know we've got a few students on the call, some people that are kind of advanced in their degrees, and then some early career people that are just beginning their work in the field. And so we thought this could be a really valuable resource for you all. So Yasmin, can you go ahead and begin the presentation? Okay. So we just want to provide you with this beginning overview of different loan repayment options that are out there. The next two slides, this slide and the next, have information that was compiled by APAGS through APA. So you can find this if you look at the very bottom of the screen. You can see the website where you can actually get a copy of these next two slides in PDF form that have these different repayment options. Due to the limited time we have today, we're not going to be able to talk about all of the programs that are here, but we're going to talk about a couple of the main ones. So this is the second slide, and you'll see the ones highlighted in red. We're going to talk about the National Health Service Corp. We're going to talk about the Faculty Loan Repayment Program through HRSA, and then we're also going to talk about the National Institute of Health. So we have a kind of mixture of people that are both in practice fields and those that are in academia and research. So we thought these three would really help reach many of you that are on the call today. So I'm not going to talk that much about the three that are highlighted, but I just want you to know that on top of these national programs that are out there that you're going to hear about today, there's also state loan repayment programs that you all can begin to look into, as well as some employers like the VA system and other mental health organizations, and even some universities have loan repayment programs. So those could be things that you all can look into at your respective organizations to see if there are any options available locally to you. So let's go on to the
Thanks, Brandy.
First presentation.
Perfect. Thanks, Brandy. So those are the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program is one that you can get through the federal government. And basically you pay up to 10 years and then they cover you after that. The VA, for those usually in practice domains within the VA, there are opportunities for loan repayment. And many places that are related to Indian Health Service also have loan repayment programs. But without further ado, I will be sending it over to Dr. David Goody Cross, and he will talk to you about the National Health Service Corps. David, are you on and with us? Maybe, maybe not. Okay, hold on. Let's see if we can. Let's see. David, I don't hear you. Are you with us? Sorry, folks. Bear with us.
You did.
David, talk to me, please. No? Don't want to talk to me? Oh, he's here. He tells us he's here. We just can't hear him. Okay, this should be interesting. I'm gonna unmute. Okay, David, I don't hear you. I don't know what to do. He says to give him a minute. I am not sure what to do. Okay, David, are you here?
I'm here. Are you here?
Woo-hoo! We hear you. Go for it. Sorry, everybody.
Awesome. Gotta love technology. Okay, so I'm going to launch and try to talk as much about this in 6 minutes as possible. So I'm David Goodcross, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the National Health Service Corps Loan Repayment Program. So I think we're, if we can go to the next slide, just a little bit about it. So the National Health Service Corps Loan Repayment Program is designed to recruit and maintain practitioners. So, and that is all types of health practitioners, including psychologists, social workers, who work in health professional shortage areas or HPSA regions, as they're designated by HRSA. So there's a lot of acronyms to know, but what's most important is that for the initial term, it is for What's most important is that this is for the clinical practice. That is the most important piece of the repayment program. The program provides $50,000 in loan repayment for the first 2 years of full-time practice, or up to $25,000 for the first 2 years of half-time practice, up to a total of $170,000. And I think you can take it to 7 years, because as on the slide, the loan repayment program award is renewable after your initial 2 year term. Can we go to the next one? Okay. So, in terms of who can apply, independently licensed health service psychologists, so this is a different definition than APA, so this is clinical or counseling psychologists only, as well as social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors who are working at Health Service Corps approved sites, and I'll talk a little bit about those sites in a minute. So the important thing about independently licensed is that you have to have a full unencumbered license. So you can't be, like in Maryland where I work, we have a thing called a psych associate, which is what you get while you're accruing your postdoctoral hours. You can't have that, so you have to be fully licensed in the jurisdiction in which you intend to practice. And it works best if you are already working at a site that is an approved site, a National Health Service Corps approved site. But like if you're someone who has graduated in May, for example, and you have you know that you're going to have a job offer, or you have a job offer to start at an approved site in July, you can apply then, although that's probably a little tricky because the deadline is at the end of March, so you probably wouldn't be able to do that. So it's most folks have already been at the site that they're working at for a while and then apply. Applicants must have qualifying student loan debt in good standing. So basically, you can't be in any of your student loans can't be in default. But it doesn't matter if they're private or public. In terms of the funding priorities, some of the preference is to applicants from disadvantaged backgrounds based on environmental factors, economic factors, or both. And I think Dr. Goebbels is going to talk about that in a bit. She'll go into more detail. What HRSA is also looking for is the likelihood that the applicants are will continue at the site after their two-year term. So again, this is primarily a recruitment tool to get mental health providers or actually all health providers into places where there are not enough of them. So the hope by HRSA is that you'll stay there. And so I don't know what the algorithm is that they use, but the intention is to figure out folks who are going to be more likely to stay and award them. Can you hear me now, Kayla Norman? Okay. All right. So the maximum award is to those who are working at sites with a HPSA score of 14 or above. And how one can find the HPSA score, the most easy way is to go to the National Health Service Center, or NHSC Job Center. And there's a listing of all the sites, right? The funding priority is for places who have a mental health score of 14 or above, and it's really important to make sure it's a mental health score because there's a mental health score, a dental score, and the medical score. So you might be at a site that has, you know, a 22 medical score, but only has an 8 mental health score, and that you would not be eligible. So it's important that the HPSA score is for 14 or above for the mental health portion of it. The application deadline is at the end of March every year. Okay, and usually around March 30th or 31st. So a little bit about the guidelines. So generally speaking, the sites that are HPSA approved provide outpatient care in rural or urban health provider shortage areas, or HPSA zones. So there's a wide range of scores sites with scores above or at or above 14, including like federally qualified health centers, which is, I work at one of those in Baltimore City, federal prisons, Indian Health Service, rural health clinics, public health departments, and hospital-based outpatient services. So VA clinics and facilities that are primarily for active duty personnel, inpatient hospitals or facilities, and county and local prisons are not eligible, even if they're in a HPSA region. So, example, I live in Baltimore. There, Baltimore City has there's a jail and there's there's a VA. None of those would qualify because even though they're in the HPSA zone. All right, sorry, next time. All right, in terms of the nitty-gritty, full-time practice entails providing at least 21 hours of patient care weekly. Half-time is at least 11 hours weekly for 45 weeks per year. The 45 weeks per year is a little bit tricky because there is a certain number of days that you can have off per year. I think it's 35 days, and that's including all your sick leave, all your vacation leave, all of your continuing education leave. So even though it says 45, it's a little bit more detailed than that. And again, this is for primarily for clinicians, right? So if you are, in my role, I supervise trainees. I can count about 2 hours of my formal supervision work to count towards the 21 hours, but the rest of the time that I'm at my job, I need to be seeing patients. So this can be really stressful for folks who are at an FQHC, where you might have a 30% or no-show rate. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Places like, for example, my agency, we have multiple sites. So, and they all have different HPSA scores. So where I am has a 16 or I think a 17 HPSA score. One in Baltimore County I think has a 14 HPSA score. One in, you know, another county has a lower score. So it's only your work at the site, at its sites, work sites that have 14 HPSA score 14 or more count towards a commitment. Now, that those are the rules. In practice, I won't. It's actually less. There really isn't a way to check up on it. So one could do what they wanted to do. Like, I mean, you could say that you're at a site that has a 15. For example, if I spent a day working at my site that has 12, so long as my employer said that I was at the site that has 15, has a HPSA score of 15, there wouldn't necessarily be a problem. But that's a little bit tricky, and we'll talk a little bit about the penalties for failing to honor your commitment a little bit later. So it's not like Big Brother. They don't really have a whole lot of oversight. It's really on the honor system. So what's important here is that you can't combine the loan repayment program through the Health Service Corps with any other loan repayment program. So if you're like the faculty loan repayment or the public service loan forgiveness whereby you pay for 10 years and then the rest is forgiven, that doesn't count. So the times, for example, for my 2-year term, I can't count this that towards the loan forgiveness. I'm going to rush through the last two slides. Sorry, let's go. Okay, so how to apply. The best and easiest way is to look for an agency that has a HPSA score of 14 or above, and you can do that, as I said earlier, at the Health Service Corps Job Center. Complete the online application. It's really not difficult at all, but you will need your financial information. You'll need exact student loan amounts, like how much when you took them out, what the exact amount is, and what the exact number, what your initial amount was, all of that. All that has to be submitted by the end of March, and then have your employment verified through the agency's HR department and your HR person. We'll just have to click a box. After you get awarded, you'll likely get an email probably a month out just asking you to confirm your banking information, and then generally just saying, hey, that you got it. Shortly thereafter, you get a bulk sum. So for me, I got a $50,000 deposit into my checking account, which was quite amazing. And HRSA just expects you to pay off your student loans. So you can spend that any number of ways, but by the end of your 2-year commitment, you have to demonstrate that your loan has been paid off, has been reduced by $50,000. So people get into trouble with that. I said something about the 35 days. We can go to the next one. So what's important here, do not default. So there are very, 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 very strict penalties for not adhering to the contract. So, for example, if you end up leaving around 2 months up before your contract ends, so if you were there for 22 months as opposed to 24 months, I think that you'll end up paying like $10,000 in penalties. So it's not worth it at all. If you can't adhere to the contract, please think seriously about whether or not you should apply. You can move to another site, so if you're in that zone, if you want to move from one FQHC to another or one prison to another, so long as that job will have you and that has a score over 14, you can keep your loan. And in case like your agency closes or something happens or you're terminated without, like if you're laid off, the Health Service Corps will help you find another job in case of relocation or your job loss. Okay. I think that's it. Oh, no, that's not it. Sorry. You can convert from full-time to half-time practice with approval at any point in time, though it extends your contract. So you'll go so if you had a 2-year contract, you'll have to end up doing 4 years if you convert shortly after you get it. But you can't convert from half-time to full-time until the end of your first contract. After your first term is over, or actually a year and a half in, you can apply for a continuation contract. And the first year is $10,000 for an additional full-time year, or $10,000, and it just kind of gradually decreases into a total of $170,000 for, I think it's 7 years of full-time practice, or $85,000 for half-time practice. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, David. And now we will be switching over to hear from Dr. Gobin. I will be unmuting her, and she will talk to you about the HRSLA Faculty Loan Repayment Program. Robin, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Take it away.
Perfect. So thank you all for being here today. And I just want to share a few quick tips and information about applying for the Health Resources and Services Administration Faculty Loan Repayment Program. So basically, this faculty loan program provides individuals who have been interested in a career in a Christian school to receive loan repayment while they're serving as a faculty member in an accredited eligible school, and a little bit about which professions are eligible. So I think that's it. So you can advance. Okay. So benefits that you receive from this loan repayment program is you get up to a maximum amount of $40,000 for 2 years of service. And so this program is a little bit unique in that you don't really have to do much of anything for that service except what you're hired to do anyway, which is teach in that health profession school. And as David mentioned, similar to that program, you get it in a lump sum. And again, you can pay it off as you would like. It's just that by the end of that two-year period, you do have to have paid a total of $40,000 towards your educational loans. And a note here is that they're not eligible. You can't apply for this if, like, you had Parent Plus loans or if you just had, like, credit card debt or personal lines of credit that you took out while you were doing school. So it really has to be an educational loan. A second piece that's beneficial to this program, and I think very unique, is the tax assistance payment. So they will pay directly to the IRS 39% of the loan repayment amount that you get. So like I said, it's up to $40,000, but it's not guaranteed that you'll get $40,000. So however much you get, they'll pay 39% to the IRS, because this will be considered as like income that you got for the year, so you will be responsible for the taxes, but it's nice that they pay a good chunk of that for you. And then another benefit of this is just you are participating in mentoring and being a gate for the next the future healthcare workforce. All right, so who is eligible to apply for this? So first, you have to be a U.S. citizen. You have to provide certification from the health profession school that you are from a disadvantaged background. And so when we talk about disadvantaged background, you need to show that you're from disadvantage either based on environmental factors or economic factors. And so when we talk about environmental factors, it's an environment that has made obtaining the knowledge, skills, and abilities required to enroll in and graduate from a graduate or undergraduate school challenging for the individual. So it's like if you went to a high school where a lot of folks didn't graduate or were going to college was not encouraged, that can be eligible. And also the economic factors is mainly if your family has an annual income below the established low income thresholds. And it's really important to get this information early on, because it can be hard to identify some of this information. Like you can't just say like that you come from a disadvantaged background, but you really have to have proof of it. So you have to go back and get like high school records or college records that show that you were eligible for Pell Grants or things like that. So you have to put some legwork into it. So that's one quick tidbit for that, to make sure that you start that ahead of time. Another piece of eligibility is that, of course, you have to have a degree or certificate in one of the eligible health profession disciplines. All right, and that will be on the next slide. These are the majority of the eligible health profession disciplines. And so you have to make sure that you have a degree in one of these experience, also like your teaching in one of the health profession areas. Members prior to or within 3 months from the date that your degree or your certificate was received. Your employment commitment has to be at one of those eligible health profession schools, and you have to be employed either full-time or part-time for at least 2 years. And another big piece about this repayment program, too, is that your employment must start on or begin or after on or before July 31st. That was for this year. Definitely, if you apply for this coming year, you want to make sure that that hasn't changed, but that can be an issue for some folks if your work doesn't start until like the fall semester, which would be like August or September. You have to talk to the dean about getting a letter to show that you are actually employed by July 31st if you want to be eligible for this particular award. And also another piece of this one that's very unique is that your school that you're employed by, that you're teaching in, has to agree in writing that they will pay principal and interest due on your educational loan. So basically they're being asked to match the amount that the loan repayment program is giving you and also pay that amount in your loans. And they can, though, request a waiver if they're unable to pay this. I know some schools just have certain stipulations where, you know, if they pay for one person, they would have to pay for everyone. So you can request a waiver of the requirement, but that does have an impact on your chances of getting funded, which I'll talk about later. All right. And so there's a lot of paperwork involved in this one. So you just want to get this up and running as soon as possible. So you have to have proof of your U.S. citizenship, a copy of your degree or certificate that you got. You have to have your CV, your transcripts reflecting completion of the professional degree certificate. You also have to go back and locate all of your original loan documentation, so like promissory notes and things like that. You want loan account statements, they ask for that. And then there's also a supplemental form that they ask you to complete, which basically just gives them authorization to call and check with like your loan grantor, the person, the company that's administering your loan, to make sure that all the information that you submitted is correct. Next slide. Okay, so your employer, the school that you work for, will also have to submit some information. So they either have to present you with the employment contract that you got or a letter of employment. And that letter, again, needs to state that you are either full or part-time and that you're guaranteed employment for at least 2 years. They also have to complete what's called the institutional employment / loan repayment verification form. And that form just basically, again, notes that you're employed, what college you're employed through, what department it's in to make sure it's one of those health services degrees, what's your start date to verify that you actually are starting on or before July 31st, and then also on that form, your school selects which option they're selecting. Either they're going to match the amount they're agreeing that up front, that they're going to match whatever you get from the loan repayment program, or they're requesting a waiver. And then there's the second form, basically where the institution has to put in writing actually a letter addressed to you that they're going to agree to make payments on your behalf for your loan, or they have to submit a letter basically explaining why they need a waiver. So it's not enough for them to just say we can't pay this, but they have to kind of say why, like it would put a financial burden on the school, or they have stipulations where it would be, you know, biased for them to repay your loans and not repay other folks' loans. And also from your previous educational institution, as I kind of alluded to earlier, you'll have to get proof of that disadvantaged background. So either college records kind of showing where your income was when you came in through the FAFSA would be a useful, or high school records kind of showing that you were eligible for a free and reduced lunch would actually work for showing disadvantaged background. So again, you have to get that information as well. Next slide. Okay, so tips. I think the main things I'm are to make sure that you put paperwork. You just want to make sure that you're gathering all of your loan payment program early, your own paperwork, your anything like that early. You want to thoroughly read the application and program guidance document that they have on their website. It's very useful, very comprehensive, so you just want to make sure that you don't miss anything in that document, because if anything's missing from your application, they'll throw it out. They won't notify you of that. You want to develop a list of all institutions where your loans were incurred towards your health professions degree, and you can get a list of that from the National Student Loan Data System. That'll help to kind of, that's a place that has all of your loans kind of organized, and I've included the link there where you can go to find that. Again, proof of disadvantaged background, you want to work on that. And then they also have a faculty loan repayment technical assistance conference call, which I found very helpful. It's very long, it's 2 hours, but they have a question and answer at the end where a lot of people go through and ask questions, and that'll help you really be able to determine if you're eligible for this award and if there's any kind of loopholes that you want to be made aware of. And also, they are very responsive to if you call or if you email them, they'll respond with questions about your eligibility or forms that you need. So I would definitely recommend not hesitating to call them, because they are very responsive. You just won't kind of be on hold all day. Okay, next slide. All right, and so lastly, I think this is really important to know, your chances of being funded. So in 2014, 19 of 143 award applications were actually awarded. And so basically how they decide who they're going to fund is the folks whose school agreed to match their funds 100%, they get first preference. And then if your school requests a partial waiver, which means they said we can't pay the entire amount, but we can pay a portion of it, then they get the second preference. And then third preference goes to folks who will say they can't pay any of their loans, they can't match any of it. So that's really worth understanding when you're going into it. And they did say that there are funds left over for third preference. So how your important just to know that you will be from my understanding, that's the main determining factor that they look at after your loans are what you say they are. All right, so I will stop there, and I'm happy to answer any questions at the end.
Thank you, Robin. So now we will be going to hear from Julie about the NIH Loan Repayment Program. Some of you are asking if the slides will be available. We are recording this with the slideshow, so that will be available at the end. And without further ado, take it away, Julie. Can you hear us, Julie?
Yes, I can hear you. Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good. Okay. I'm hoping I won't take too much of your time so that we can leave some time for questions and answers. Again, I'll be discussing the National Institutes of Health or loan, the NIH Loan Repayment Program. Can advance to the next slide. There are a number of loan repayment programs that are offered through NIH, through their extramural research programs, and I will be just focusing on the health disparities research program that I was awarded. So next question. The next slide just highlights the tenets of the Health Disparities LRP. Again, it focuses on the health professionals addressing health disparities research. And it's meant to recruit and retain qualified health professionals and really help them develop the skill sets and develop their research careers and trajectories. And they really want to highlight those who are focusing on minority health disparities or other health disparities. So the funding for this particular award comes from the National Institutes of Minority Health and Health Disparities, so NIMHD. While that professional is actually employed at an agency or an institution that allows the conducting of specific research. It's important to note that approximately 50% of the awards that are made to health professionals, those individuals are members of identified health disparities populations. So that's a pretty unique facet of this award. Some of the benefits of this particular LRP includes a maximum of $70,000 for their 2 years of research commitment, and again, that's $35,000 per year. They make a payment directly to your lender in quarterly installments, but this is based upon your research supervisor's verification of that commitment. So make sure that you have a reliable research supervisor or person that you identify. Because, you know, labs will affect the payment. Another benefit includes mentorship and development of social justice research that really addresses the needs of diverse populations. So this is part of your general trajectory of research. This is a great application to apply for. And they hope that you develop the skills and networks that can enhance your chances of obtaining or being awarded an NIH research grant. So again, this is really to help facilitate that pipeline of accessing NIH funds in the long run. Okay. So some of the program eligibility include being a U.S. citizen. There's an encouragement for women, individuals from underrepresented groups, and persons with disabilities to apply. You have to have a doctoral degree from a health profession, and they include the following, and they include some of the fields that Dr. Goben highlighted as well. It's important to note the qualified educational debt. It must so the total qualified educational debt must equal to or be in excess of 20% of your institutional base salary at the time of the award. So again, your loans just need to be more than what you actually make. So that's a given. Okay. Your research must be supported by a domestic nonprofit foundation, university, professional association, or nonprofit institution, or U.S. government agency. So that domestic foundation or professional association or institution is considered nonprofit based upon their internal revenue code. NIH grants and university salaries are considered eligible funding. So your primary employment must be at the nonprofit institution. So any employment or income outside of that nonprofit institution must be separate from your research. So I do work as a clinician as well as a consultant, and so what I make there can't be more than what my primary income is at my institution. Okay, so next slide. So the research that you conduct, it essentially represents 50% of your level of effort and consumes an average of at least 20 hours per week during each quarterly service period. So you have to participate in about 20 hours a week of research. And the contract typically starts around July 1st of that of the following year of the application. So you submit, and then if you're awarded, you'll receive the funds July 1 that next year. Let's see. You must agree to conduct research that that is lawful, you know, according to NIH and Health and the Department of Health and Human Services. Recipients of NRSA fellowships and training grants can apply. However, and if they do receive an LRP award, they must defer their service payback until they complete the research component. So after the 2 years of research, they're able to go on and do the service that's connected to that. So I'm not going to go into all the components of this application process. Just know that you can, that the application process is electronic. So you'll submit everything electronically, and they'll provide you with each step of the process. Some important things that you'll need include a statement, your information statement with your NIH bio sketch, funding information, so identifying the organization that you work for, that it is, indicating that it is a nonprofit entity. You'll need to provide a personal statement that should include a discussion of your career goals and your academic objectives. So there needs to be kind of a really good integration of both of those. You need to print, sign, and fax other information verifying your citizenship as well as your loans. Some important things that you really do need to address, can you go back just really quickly, are your research activities. Make sure that you provide a really good description of your research activities and incorporate your current or proposed research product. That should include specific responsibilities that you have, as well as team members might have. Okay, you can move forward. Okay, so some of the things that you'll also want to keep in mind is that the Institute and Center for Review scoring and ranking of your application is based on the following things. So just note, it's very competitive. I don't have up-to-date stats, but in 2013 there were 334 applicants, and only 113 were awarded. So this could be based upon research priorities that the institutions and centers have, so that could vary from year to year. Some things to really consider when applying it include your previous training and experience, your proposed research activities during the LRP contract, so is it feasible and reasonable? Your commitment to a research career, so really making that clear in your application, and the strength of your letters of recommendation. So they need to reiterate that you are on this path, that this is, you know, that this is your intention, you know, upon completing the LRP. And also the quality of your overall environment. Is it going to help prepare your research career? So I'll let you review those things. So the next slide is similar to the others. So really be conscientious about the deadlines. So for the NIH deadline for health disparities, it's November 16th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So plan ahead. Thoroughly review the website, the application materials, and join an LRP information webinar. I think there might be one that's taking place at the end of this month. The program, the technical assistants and program managers are very open to kind of helping to guide you through that process, answering questions, even connecting you with mentors who might be in the area who have similar interests or expertise. You want to identify a reliable research mentor and team that can support the type of research that you plan to conduct, and really think about that research and perhaps align it with your current research trajectory and goals. If you're at a teaching institute, so I'm currently at a teaching institute, and so I partnered with a Research One Institute, so I have a mentor there that does tribe-focused research. So in that collaboration and partnership, I'm able to meet the 20-hour goal. I was able to propose kind of a well-crafted mentor plan. Have a sound kind of manuscript or publication plan and timeline for accomplishing all of the research tasks. And also, I would encourage you to identify a plan to submit a grant. They really are that kind of will help. I think your application to know that this is part of what you'd like to do. You want to talk with the program manager, as I noted before. And as well as seek technical assistance. Talk with colleagues or peers who've received an NIH loaner payment. Ask them for feedback on your application or to look at their application if they're willing to share it. You can renew your application. I'm not sure how many years. Up to 2 years you can renew the application. I'm not sure about the amount of monies that you'll receive. I think it's contingent on what's available. But you want to do this a year before your actual repayment ends. Also, please adhere to the LRP, the rules of the LRP. Breach of contract could include is $7,500 for every month of unfulfilled service, or $31,000 per year, whichever is higher. So really be fulfill, the tenets of the LRP, because it's lofty. That's all I have for you.
Thank you, Julie. Now, really appreciate everyone on the call, and we wanted to open it up for questions. Whoa, sorry about that. Feel free to raise your hand or type your question into the screen, and we will let you we'll bring you in that way. Just let us know what questions you have. So with that, sorry, my screen is looking weird. If you raise your hand, I will call on you, or you can go ahead and ask the question. And if there are no questions, you can just log off. We will be sending you an email with the recording as well as with a questionnaire. But right now, Naomi, I think you are on. Naomi, are you with us? Do you want to ask a question? Naomi? Her question is for Julie. Are NIH's LRP, do you recommend contacting the program staff for the LRP domain that you wish to apply for? Julie, do you want to answer that? Hold on. Julie, do you want to answer that one?
Sure, yes. I do recommend connecting with the domain that you want to apply for. I think it's helpful to get clarity on whether or not, the type of research that you're doing is aligned with the domain that you're applying for, and they'll provide you with guidance in terms of yes, it's aligned, or no, you might want to try someone else. So yes.
So I think that is a fair, I think all of our presenters said contacting the offices is probably one of your best bets, and an important mm-hmm. thing to do. Do we have other questions? I'll look for hands. I don't see any other hands. Someone asked if we are going to have the slides. Like I said, we will email you a questionnaire and a copy of the recording. Dennis has a question. Could you provide more information about how the NIH LRP works with those on a training grant? Does that mean that the time on the training grant cannot overlap with the years on the LRP? It wasn't clear to me. Julie, I think that's to you again.
I recommend first contacting the LRP folks just to get clarity about your specific questions. My understanding is that if you have service that's related to that training grant, then that has to be delayed before you can actually, or the service part of the training grant is delayed and then you're able to do the research. I'm not sure if it's clear.
So from my understanding, Julie, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the way it is, Dennis is essentially NIH doesn't want to be double paying you. So if they're already paying for you to do research, they're not going to then also pay for you to do that same research and support your loan. So it has to be separate. So exactly what that looks like might be different, but they're not going to be paying you, for example, for a postdoc NIH grant and then also paying your NIH loans. However, if you are proposing a study that is an offshoot of an existing NIH-funded grant, that's fine, as long as that grant isn't paying you directly. So there's a little fuzzy area, but the best way that I've understood it is they're not going to double pay you. So hopefully that part's clear. And if you are currently on like an F-32 or something, they might say, okay, you have the NIH grant, but those funds aren't going to kick in till your F is completed. But for the specifics on that, I would contact the office. But Julie, does that sound about right?
Yes. Thank you, Yasmin.
No problem. Other questions? Dennis says that makes sense. So good. I'm glad that we make sense. Other questions in the chat or in the attendee box? Okay, I don't see any hands. I don't see anything in the chat. We really are going to ask that you all complete a survey we're going to send you at the end of this training. It'll really help us to improve. I know we've trying to work out the technical kinks on all of this, so we really appreciate your patience with us, and hopefully you're finding some of this information helpful as you start considering how the heck you're going to pay off your student loans, because I know that's what I've been thinking. Any other questions? Are you all waiting, hoping that someone else will ask a question that you were hoping would get? Okay, well, I think we're officially done then. Oh, wait, is there a question? Oh, Naomi says thank you. Thank you, Naomi. We appreciate your attendance. It has been great to have you guys all on the call, and we look forward to holding more. We are planning on holding more training, so be on the lookout. In addition to ones on student loans, we'll be talking about getting licensure, as well as others in the future about kind of surviving tenure and the tenure track and the research. So be on the lookout for specific webinars in your areas of interest.